Hello, everybody, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 118. We are back. It's a brand new year. We're here to talk about Linux. A lot of big announcements the last few days, few weeks, but we just haven't been here to give them to you. We'll touch base on a few of them, but we have our big review coming up. We'll just talk more about here in a minute. I, of course, am Cody Cooper, the co-host of the show, but this could not be possible without the other half of the equation. My good friend, door-to-door geek, Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, going pretty good. Hectic, crazy. The last 2 weeks, I have been honestly, like, the amount of Linux stuff is too much. I might do, like, an inbox zero here before next show and just delete everything and just start over. But there's too much to talk about.
Dude, I know. Yeah, I try to keep... I need to get better with my inbox organization, but no, yeah, like the last couple weeks, it's gotten in triple digits, which doesn't happen to me. If I get in double digits, I start to get fidgety. I start shifting stuff around, deleting this and that, but a lot of good stuff, especially just today. I mean, there was some big stuff today.
Yeah,
very cool. So one of those things that was announced today, really quick, that I would like to touch base on is of course, and this is just a teaser. We're not going to go into it. The Ubuntu for phones. Okay, going to be ported to the Samsung Galaxy Nexus. I may be getting a used Nexus in the next couple days off a guy from Craigslist. So as long as I don't get stabbed and have left in the parking lot to bleed out, you might get a review of that from me shortly after it comes out. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, that is way too much to talk about because it's all speculation.
Right. But there was a show recently that I believe you were on where you guys speculated the hell out of it for quite a few minutes.
Yeah, we went kind of crazy for like 45 minutes on the latest Droid Nation, which is going to be published as soon as I get my audio editing rig fixed, which should be hopefully tonight.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, we went into all kinds of speculation possibilities, things that Mark Shuttleworth himself said that not a lot of people picked up on that gives me hope as an end user, I'll say. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yep. Plenty more time to devote to that on another show, but we got a lot of stuff to talk about. What do we got on the docket this week, Dor?
Well, the first is the basic, and that is don't stop. Why? Because if you stop like we did for 2 weeks, I mean, audio starts not working. We kind of forget how to set up our own audio, and we really slacked on notes, and there's like literally enough content for probably 6+ hours worth of content. So note to self, just next time, just don't stop.
Well, don't stop or plan ahead next time. You and I, and I'll say, guys, you know, we haven't done a show in 2 weeks. We had planned on doing an off-cycle show and then releasing it, but things came up. So we hate to wait this long too, you know. Dor and I talk throughout the week via Voxer or text or whatever, but this is where we get the majority of our stuff done together right here on this show. And Dor, I mean, I missed you.
I know this plan ahead thing. That's a new concept. I'm gonna have to read up on that.
Yeah, I'll send you a nice 9,000 word email about it, and you can read it.
Good.
And digest it. Let me know what you think.
Hey. I'll be
but you're gonna have to plan ahead and inbox zero so you actually see it. So there you go. It all comes back.
Well,
around.
That's not gonna happen, right?
Okay.
Right now there's 237 emails. But I digress. And none of it's spam. Bottom line is yes, we are gonna do better at this because we don't have a choice. Because to be quite honest, I'm itchy. I'm like, you know, itchy. I wanted to do this more. And I did get more than a couple people saying, in a very kind way, there's no show this week. This sucks. And I was like, yes, I know it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the odds of Christmas and New Year's coming on a Tuesday again? Come on. It must be 1,000,000 to 1, right? Oh, wait, no, it's only 1 to 7. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll just forget about that. You have an update for us about this winter. Do you not?
About this winter?
Well,
about something coming up soon?
Is middle March winter still?
Yeah. Well, where we're going, it's probably going to be cold there still.
Oh. Yeah, pretty safe to say.
We want to make an official announcement here. The Northeast GNU Linux Fest, which of course our good friend Jonathan Nato runs, will be happening the weekend of, I believe, March 16th and 17th in Boston, Massachusetts. And Dor and I both are officially going to have talks there, and we will be speaking live at the fest. So we're very, very excited about that. I'm booking my plane ticket, I think, tomorrow, but all the other arrangements have been made. I'm super psyched. It's my second fest. Now, Dor, this is your first time to NELF, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Very cool.
And I'll say Jonathan basically told me I could have an entire room for the entire day kind of thing. And I really hope it's only one day. He's not saying 2 days. So what I think I'm going to do is something to the effect of do a thing for like 30 minutes to 45 minutes, have at least 15 minutes if questions are wanted, desired, 15 minute break, come back in the room, and half an hour to 45 minutes, questions, 15 minute break, and do that repetitively all day. It's going to be something like my Linux for the Rest of Us video series. That's what I'll say.
There you go. Now, I'm just spitballing here, and I literally just thought of this, but if we have fans in the area that can make it there, let us know on Google Plus or send an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. Let us know, and Dor, let me know what you think about this real quick. What if you and I did like a live Q&A?
I'd be more than happy to.
Or like a live episode or something. I think that would just be awesome. Because I've never done a podcast in front of a live audience. And I mean, I've performed in front of live audiences, so it don't scare me, but I think that would be fun. So
yeah, it could be very cool.
Very awesome. So yeah, definitely check out northeastlinuxfest.org for the details. I don't believe the schedule has been posted yet. That's still getting worked out, but yeah. Definitely check out any other things. Jonathan Nato, for instance, the Accessible Computing Foundation, we'll talk about later, but yeah, overall very, very excited to be going. And also, huge announcement, NELF, our good friend Russ Winner is going to be there. He confirmed that yesterday. And unfortunately, he said he's brewed too much beer and he needs to bring it to get rid of it. And I'm gonna try to help him.
That's a shame. I know. Too much beer. Yep. I don't know what to tell him.
I told him, I said, bring it. We'll figure it out. That's what brothers do. They help each other out.
Teamwork. Yes.
Teamwork.
And I will say, I believe we are going to try to get there on Friday, which is actually the 15th, I believe. Maybe.
Because I think Sunday. Yeah, Sunday is St. Patty's Day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So, yeah, we're going to try to be there on the 15th. Maybe not the 15th, really early in the morning, the 15th, but the 15th.
Very cool. So yeah, check that out. And yeah, hit us up with anything. Hit us up if you're going to go, or if you're thinking of going, and anything you'd like to see from either of us if you're going, or anything you'd like to hear, like live from the fest or anything at all, because we'll accommodate as best we can.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to get Jonathan on here in 2 weeks, maybe three at the most, so we can hear about the goings on there.
Yeah, that would be great to get an update, because the clock's ticking. I mean, it's crazy to think that, oh, it's so far away. No, it's like 9 weeks away. It's like nothing. So yeah, right. Very cool. Yes, we'll have him on soon and get caught up in all the business with NELF.
Very cool.
Awesome. So next up here, I believe it's just the big meat, right? Yep, here we go. Now, weeks ago, we had, it was just two or three shows ago, I guess, we had talked about the Acer Chromebook, $199 Acer Chromebook, and then how Dor was hoping, crossing his fingers, he was going to get one for Christmas, and I was thinking about purchasing one myself, and we promised you guys a review when that happened, and I'm happy to say that we both did get Chromebooks. Santa was good to Dor, my wife was good to me, and we've had them for, what, about 2 weeks now, Dor? A little over 2 weeks.
I'd say just about 2 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we're gonna give you our in-depth review on the device, and then we'll go do emails and voicemails at the end of the show, because we have a lot to lot to get through, but we're going to comprehensively kind of break down what we think about the Chromebook.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, it turned out my wife actually purchased mine early-ish November, and she said it literally got here in like 3 days. Some people complained about delivery taking a while, but my wife didn't experience that.
Yeah, my wife, it only took like 3 or 4 days, and it was, well, I think she ordered on a Friday and got here on like a Tuesday, so you figure business days, it was still pretty quick. I think people are having a lot of trouble with shipping times on the Samsung Chromebook, which is the other model, which you can't get anywhere. So when it was available, I'm sure they took way too many orders they could fulfill, and it took weeks to roll them out. So, but yeah, we both got them fairly quickly.
Do you want to go into our decision process on why we got this one?
Definitely. That's a great place to start. In fact, I kind of flip-flopped, because on the last episode that we spoke about the Chromebooks, because I kind of went in depth of the specs because I read up on it. Like if I could go into a store, walk in and buy one today, which one would I get? And initially I thought I would get the Samsung for a variety of reasons. Samsung, known for the great screens. They have a great screen. It's an ARM-based. Therefore, it's going to be using lower power. It has better battery life. It actually has a USB 3 port on it, which is insane for like a for a tiny device on this, right? And there were a variety of reasons to get that one. But I ended up going with the Acer one, not necessarily because the Samsung ones are hard to find. I could get one if I really, really wanted one, because like I know some people. But I decided to get the Acer one. It is $50 cheaper, which is beneficial to a lot of people. But I bought it mainly because it's also going to be, from what I'm reading and from my experience, it's going to be a lot easier to physically open up to add different components into. Have you done that yourself yet, Dor?
I haven't opened it up, but I did do more than a little bit of reading up on it. And everything tells me this Acer version is the hacker version, and the Samsung version is the person who never wants to open it up, never wants to play inside. They just want it.
Right. Because, just like with anything, if you look at like the new MacBooks or like the new like the HP laptops, they're all metal. You know, they have the one unibody type of case. It's going to be a pain to get into them, but you can get into them with a lot of work. You could get into the Samsung if need be, but yeah, it's. It's super, super friendly. You flip it over. I looked at it. I was like, it's just a smaller Acer laptop. I'm going to be able to throw anything I want into this. So that was definitely another reason as to why I wanted to get it.
Same here. To me, I've had really good success with Acer hardware. I know a lot of people in the past have had very mixed results with Acer. I have had nothing but great success with them. But I don't know about you. I don't remember if I talked to this about you or not, but I literally took the Samsung model and the Acer model, and side by side, and there are certain things, in my opinion, better about the Acer model versus the Samsung model. The physical dimensions, the physical weight, the screen size are all basically identical. There's no difference.
Yeah, the Acer is a little heavier, but overall, it's like across the board, you're talking quarters of an ounce or, 18ths of an inch. It's all very identical. Yeah.
Right. And now the screen is the exact same size and the exact same resolution. That blew me away. I could have swore, well, this is a Samsung screen. It's going to be a big screen. It's going to be a fancy screen. It's going to be a high def screen. No, it's the exact same resolution as my Acer.
Yep.
The lower end model has a higher end webcam.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, the Acer has an HD webcam. The Samsung has a VGA webcam. That didn't make any sense to me at all.
Yep.
Okay. The Acer has an Intel Celeron processor.
Mm-hmm. 1.1 gigahertz.
Right. The Samsung has a ARM processor. Technically speaking, Linux and everything else I want to load on one of these devices is much more native compatible, easier compatible with Intel. So to me, the Intel processor was a plus for that.
Definitely.
The RAM is super easy upgradable in both, and I believe they both had the same amount of RAM, 2 gigs.
Yep.
So no win there with the Samsung. Okay. Port speaking, This does not have USB 3.0, but this has one more USB port. This has a total of three USB ports, where the Samsung had two, one 3 and one 2.0 port. So that's not a real big difference maker then. And on this lower end Acer model, I have a VGA, an HDMI out, and an Ethernet port.
Yep.
Plus, plus, plus. Now, I literally just recorded an episode of My Hard Drive Died with Scott. It's going to be posted very soon at panos.com. So if you were missing that show, it is coming back. But here's what I'm going to talk about that for. The Samsung and the Acer have an SD slot built in. Be warned. Be heavily warned. A SD card greater than 32 gigabytes, you might have severe issues using in either of these devices.
Really?
Because higher than 32 gigabyte SD card is EXFAT, E-X-F-A-T, which is patent encumbered, and the patent's owned by Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Google themselves has not paid that patent.
And if you want to hear a more detailed discussion by Scott, listen to the previous episode of Linux, or excuse me, of My Hard Drive Died, because Steve Cherubino went in depth with him about that. So very, very good to know.
Well, and he did go a little bit in depth into it again, talking about a different aspect of her too. So that was really interesting to me.
Very cool.
Now the only other feature on the Samsung versus Acer that I know is the Acer has a 320 gigabyte physical spinning 5,400 RPM hard drive. That's a slow hard drive. That it's not the slowest, but it's your typical laptop slow hard drive.
It's like a mid-range.
But it's, yeah. Right. But it's 320 gigs. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's nice. The Samsung has a 16 gigabyte SSD. Again, to me, I much rather have space or have easy upgrade paths. And I get both of them with the Acer. So to me, I don't want to say the Samsung was a ripoff. I could never see myself choosing the Samsung just from those stats.
Yep. If I could only get a USB 3 or a USB 3 port on this, I think that'd be cool. Cause
don't be shocked if you can crack the case and there's a spot where you can plug something into it for USB 3. I don't know about that.
Fantastic.
But now my build quality, I'll say, on about you. I think it's a very fair build quality for $199. In fact, pretty good for $199. It's not a great build quality, but for $199, I thought it was pretty good, pretty solid.
I was really impressed by it because I've used netbooks in the past, and a lot of people were saying, oh, it's just like an overblown netbook with a limited OS. Who cares? But no, we'll get more into the OS later. But no, I really, and I've owned, one of the Acer, I can't remember one of their, Aspire. I used to own an Acer Aspire, and yeah, they do make good laptops, but kind of what Steve talked about years ago, some lower-end laptops feel like, you know, they're made by Fisher-Price because it's all plastic, and they're very bulky, and I figured that this thing would be a much fatter, but I'll hold it up to the camera here. It's actually quite thin. It's like 3.2 or 3.3 pounds, and yeah, the build quality, I was actually really impressed. Instead of a classic like hinge that goes all the way across the back, it has the two more solid arms to where when you lift the screen up, and it's still really sturdy, but a lot less space for kind of things to get into. The keyboard itself, what'd you think about the keyboard door?
Pleasantly shocked. Mm-hmm. I like banging away on that thing. It wasn't springy keyboard. It wasn't loud keyboard or clanky. But it gave me enough resistance when I was typing that I could type pretty good.
Yeah, I'm holding it up next to there are of course the Chiclet type keys, and I'm holding it directly above a Chiclet keyboard I have here, and the buttons are the exact same size. So yeah, it didn't feel cramped at all after like the first 5 minutes. The keys are nice and spaced. Where you know sometimes you know if yeah, especially, and I'm going to be comparing. Not necessarily this experience to a netbook experience, but a lot of negativity toward this device has come from, like I said earlier, it just being kind of an overblown netbook. Not the case. Mm-hmm. I consider this to be a slightly smaller laptop, whereas you might call like a netbook like a micro laptop. I would consider this like a mini.
Right.
Because I don't know about you, but the guys who carry on like a 17-inch, like a 15.6, it's basically like a lunch tray. It's like,
it is a lunch
tray. You know, if I mean, if that's your only machine and like you're docking it at home to like a bigger screen,
right,
then that's right, one thing. But to carry something like that around.
Right. And you have to take it to school, mm-hmm, to carry to lunch so you can put your milk on that's top right of it. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but you get the ring on the top, you know, for yeah, from the juice. Yeah, but yeah, having this thing, I mean, and then the screen size, definitely not small. I got a 16 gig flash card. I've been throwing videos on it to watch on breaks and stuff, and the speakers and the video quality are very good for, you know, watching videos. I downloaded the latest Humble Bundle, so I got that Indie Game the Movie in HD. Been watching that, really, really good. But also, just it's like a kind of like an everyday carry, and we'll go into this more too, but the weight of it, like putting it in my bag with mm-hmm, with like a couple books and, you know, my Nexus 7, a bunch of cables and stuff, it was like I wasn't carrying a laptop. It's just that light. Now, right, a couple weeks before I went to OLF, I took my my old HP DB2000, and that thing killed my back carrying it around with just a little bit of clothes in the backpack. And then when I went to OLF, I took my System 76 Lemur Ultra, still a little heavy. And this, it's like there's just nothing there.
Right. I agree. The weight is heavy enough so you know it's there, in my opinion, when you carry it around like by itself, so it has no chance of accidentally slipping and falling. But it's, you could carry it and like not have back pain, mm-hmm, kind of thing at all. Now, I will say the adapter I thought was a little big from what I had it pictured in my head, but it wasn't huge. And I love the fact that's a long cord.
Yes. Yeah. The AC adapter too is really cool. It has I haven't bought an Acer laptop in many years, but the one thing I really appreciated about it was that for the actual two prongs that plug in, it has a detachable head, because yeah, so you have the brick and the detachable head. Yeah, you can basically screw it on one of two ways, to where the AC adapter itself will plug in either horizontally or vertically to your power brick. So if you have, you know, I mean, you know how we are. I mean, like, I have like five power bricks here with all sorts of stuff, yep, running. To where, yep, it looks like, you know, like a transformer. You see all these things sticking out of it, you know. But yeah, like if I take it to work, I have to do it one way because I have one mounted a certain way. But if I'm at home, I just do it the other way. So yeah, that very, very cool option, which I did not expect on something like this, which is technically like, yeah, their lower end. So it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, it was stupid, but it was cool. And I thought it was so cool, I showed it to my wife and she even said, I've never even seen anything like that before. You can actually turn it 90 degrees. Yes,
exactly. Very, very cool. And yeah, as far as the build quality, it's sturdy and solid enough to where you don't feel like it's so fragile. Right, like you'd be carrying around and am I going to squeeze it too hard? Is it going to crack in half? That type of thing. No, it's not like that at all. Really, really impressed with the build quality overall.
Yeah. For the price, very good. I think where I'll say just for the price, very good. Mm-hmm. But you can't expect it to be, you know, $600 laptop good.
No.
Right. What was the next topic you wanted to talk about on it?
The physical build we talked about. Chrome OS as an experience.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say right off the bat, and we had asked you guys for some questions that you'd like to address, and we'll try to address those throughout the review, and I do appreciate them, but I'm just going to kind of lay this out there. Dor and I both, we didn't do any modifications to it whatsoever. We didn't add any different hardware. We didn't try installing another version of Linux on it yet.
Yeah.
And it's not that, I mean, trust me, when it was en route, I was on podnuts.com/Amazon pricing RAM and pricing, mm-hmm, SD cards and pricing another hard drive, right? I was just like, I'm going to slap this stuff in there and it's going to catch fire. It's going to be moving so fast. But I got it and I started using it for like the first day. And one of the things that, and Dor and I didn't talk about it too much during, because we wanted to save a lot of the conversation for this episode. But the one thing I told him was that with Chrome OS, I love how focused I am while I'm using it, because there's not a lot of other bells and whistles that will distract me from getting done what I need to do, whether it be, you know, research or culling through email or just general web surfing. Whereas with any other system I have, I mean, I could be bringing up, you know, all sorts of, you know, I'll have like Conky running and have all this other stuff. But I was very surprised how with my ADD, I was able to focus so well with this device. And honestly, it made me want to stick with it as long as possible. What was your experience with Adore?
Dude, you just said it exactly. And dude, when I'm opening that thing up, I'm sitting there, I'm already thinking, I can load Fedora, I can load Arch, I can load Ubuntu, I can load Body, I can load all these different ones. Which one first? Ooh. And then I took it to work and I said, well, I'll research it there. You know, took it to work, tethered it to the phone. And about 20 minutes later, I said, I like this.
Yep.
Because of my ADHD, I come down to my desktop computer, for instance. And I say to myself, when I come down here, I gotta make sure I gotta do X, Y, and Z. Coming down the step, X, Y, Z. Coming down the step, X, Y, Z. Turning the corner, X, Y, Z. Coming to the chair, X, Y, Z. Sitting in the chair, X, Y, Z. Turn on the monitor, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Ooh, I can do that too. Ooh, I can do that too. And then 20 minutes later, I'm like,
But which do I do first? Oh, wait, there's G and H and I. And J.
Exactly. Yep. And I just could never. Now with this thing, I say to myself, no, I really should do X and Y. I open it up, boom, I start doing X, and then I'm done doing X. Okay, now let me go do Y. And then I close the device. And then I did that literally like two or three times. And then I was said to myself, wait a minute, there's some dirty trick going on here. I'm actually being productive.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I'm actually getting done something I set out to do. Yeah. The hell kind of voodoo's going on? I know. Here? This is not me.
It's like someone planted an idea, like Inception. You know, they plant the idea and then it becomes reality. I think if someone planted the idea that I needed or wanted one of these, and then I got one, and all of a sudden, I'll tell you right now, this is a little behind the curtain thing. But for the emails, I can't read them in the format they're sent to me because they're all over the place. So I literally take all the emails, reformat them into a Google Doc, and then read them in the show in the same text, same size, right? My email doc this week has never been more complete and long and focused than now that I had this device to do it with, because I didn't have all that other crap to bother me while I was compiling it. So, yeah.
Yeah, dare I say, a seamless, peaceful, productive experience.
Yes.
It was just that easy. And I basically, after 2 days of this, I said, you know what? I'm going to keep it on stock for at least a little bit and let's see how productive I can actually be. Now, it is a quote unquote limited experience because it is Chrome OS. This is not Linux. This is not Windows. This is not Mac. This is not Slackware even. Dig it, Slackware. But it's a very tight, very polished, very clean interface with more than a couple offline capabilities. I will add that a lot of people totally discredit or say are even non-existent. Okay. You do not need to be online to use this thing for a lot of tasks. Yep. Granted, if I write an email and hit send, it's not being sent because it doesn't have magic. It caches it till I go online and then it sends it. And there are actually stuff like audio editors, audio recorders, games, picture editors, all different other kinds of things that you can do offline. Do I do them? No, I don't need to do them. Do I do email offline? Yeah, actually quite frequently. Do I do Google Docs offline? Yeah, quite frequently because I can. I'll say I am perfectly happy with that experience because I use my Chrome browser, and because I use my Chrome browser on my desktop and I sign into it, I have that super sleek, silent background sync going on to where I can even open my Chromebook, look at my last session on my desktop, and open a tab that was open in that browser when I closed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's those little kind of dirty backdoor things that I'm sure people can scream, Google's spying on me. Arr! Well, they even let me spy on me, so I guess it ain't that bad. I found it actually useful a couple times, personally. Now, one big failing, I will say, I seriously believe they purposefully limited the network capabilities of this device.
Mm-hmm.
My logic is they wanted to push the purchase of the Samsung with the 3G yada yada internet on it. Because by default, this Chromebook cannot connect to what's called ad hoc networks. 99.9% of phones, when you turn tethering on, turn hotspot on, it turns your phone into an ad hoc network. So you turn your phone on Wi-Fi tether, you go into your Chromebook, and it doesn't even see the network exist. But, you know, I pwned my device hard, so it didn't take me long till I got myself a infrastructure mode tethering application on my Android device, and I'm in just fine, just fine.
And what application was that, Dor?
Well, there's two actually now I found.
Oh.
First, I was utterly impatient and incompetent and immoral and unethical and unmethical. And I purchased Foxfi. Now, here's the devil's advocate. My favorite sister-in-law, because I only have one sister-in-law, but she's so cool. She gave me a $25 Google Play gift card. So she paid the Foxfi developers for me to use their piece of crap tethering application. So, but then,
so your hands are clean.
My hands are very clean. But since then, I want to say Andrew, maybe in Google Messenger / Huddle, suggest to me Wi-Fi tether -TREVE mod. And using that wireless tether, I was able to bam, connect, no problems.
Very cool. I'll have to check that out later. Yeah, I also broke down and bought Foxfi. And if you want to hear our opinions on Foxfi, there's a great Android App Addicts where we just kind of go off on it. Because there was a rug pulled out from under people. And then, but I mean, it's like, what, $6.95, $7.95. And I thought it's cheap enough for me to just say, you know what, I get to solve this problem right now.
Right now.
And I'm done. Yes. Exactly. Yes, we could have, you know, sideloaded some, you know, Chinese, you know, tethering application that did both. And then we're like, okay, yeah, we're fighting the power. But how many minutes or hours would that have taken? It's not that we're lazy. It's just that we have better uses for our time. We had to get this review started, and I couldn't do it without getting online with this thing wirelessly wherever I wanted to go. So I just did it.
Nah, I was kind of lazy, and I wanted it right now. I was very impatient, I'll say.
You're right now, right now. Well, Doors being honest, I just tried to dress it up a bit.
No, I was just super impatient, and I'm sitting there at work. I could have walked to my desk naked, and I'm serious. I don't think anybody would have saw me. There were so few people at work. So it's like, dude, at least I can do is answer my emails.
Yep.
You know, and then I went and said, it ain't working. 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 And then I kind of freaked out and I got it working.
Now, a little bit more on what something you mentioned earlier, Dor, was that yes, it is a limited experience, but that's almost a disservice. Because to call it a limited experience, I mean, most of the people who are buying it for themselves should know that right off the bat. Hopefully, yeah. People aren't getting duped into it, much like people years ago bought those Ubuntu desktops at Walmart, yeah. And they couldn't get home and load like their poker applications on it, so then they returned them, that type of thing. So, yes, it is limited in the fact that you do have a variety of applications you can run on it, but it's a very... As stock, I would say stock, it's a very direct device as far as what you can do with it or what you should expect out of it. But if you go into that knowing that and then you buy it and you're disappointed, well, that's almost your fault for not doing the research. You know, it's like buying a car and then it didn't have this one feature on it or this feature. You can only go up to 40 miles an hour. Well, you should have known that before you bought it.
Right.
So once again, it comes down to you taking responsibility for your technology experience.
Yeah, I had to say to a coworker, I said, yes, it's a laptop, but it's not. And he said, well, what do you mean it's not? I said, you can't install Photoshop. And he said, oh, okay, now I understand. It's like, right. Right. This is not a laptop. This is a device. It's a task device. And I tried to explain to him, it is the complete antithesis, if I can't even say that word.
Antithesis.
Right. Thank you. It's that of like the Nexus 7. He has a Nexus 7. I said, look, they are complete and utter polar opposites. The Nexus 7 comes flat, and then you keep going to the app store to get all these things you want to do on it, and you have to install it on the device, and it's very dependent on hardware specifications. Mm-hmm. With this device, what you get when you open it up via signing in to your Chrome thing is seriously like 85% of what you get, because that's really all you need in this environment. You can go to the Chrome app web store thing, and they do have a complete section devoted to offline extensions, yep, add-ons, whatever. Mm-hmm. But you don't, as a Chrome user, you don't do something and say, you know what I need? I need a Chrome web store app to do this task.
Right.
Where in Android, you say that every 15 seconds.
Yep.
You know, in this device, if there's a website that satisfies your need, it's already built into the browser. Just type the address and you're there.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and it's funny you bring up the Nexus 7, because normally when I would go to work, or if I would go out, I would have my Nexus 7 and my phone and then my my laptop on me. Whereas with the Chromebook, I never felt the need to take my laptop with me anymore. So it's just been sitting here.
Yeah,
I mean, between carrying, you know, my phone, my next, I mean, realistically, I could just have my phone and the Chromebook and be fine as far as like a day to day, you know, get things done type of thing. I mean, I'm not doing that much tech work anymore, so I probably couldn't do the majority of stuff with that. But yeah, I mean, just day to day needs, it suited me so well. And you mentioned this earlier, and I'll kind of spin off of it a bit too. When I first got it, I literally booted it up, signed in, which we'll go on about here in a second too, because I have a big thing to announce about that. When I signed in, got into the browser, I immediately started researching how to get Linux on it. But after about 15 to 20 minutes of that, I thought, you know what, this is actually kind of nice. I'm just gonna let it go. And then it's 15 days later and I still have it on there. Not because I'm lazy and I just didn't have the time to throw it on there. I mean, I could throw it on there easy. And I could do what I do with my desktops. I could literally take this hard drive out, throw it, slap another one in there, and then install Kubuntu on it or that Fedora spin or whatever. But I didn't, because I just thought, you know, I like it for what it is.
Yeah.
So I've just kept it.
I can tell you, I am going to load Bodhi on it. Mm-hmm. Bodhi.
Yep.
Bodhi on it soon. I don't know how soon. But the main reason I am and I feel safe is because it's so well documented how to go back to default Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe I'm going to go back to default Chrome, especially for Nelf. You know what I mean? Because if history's taught me anything, you don't want to make presentations over complex or over beautiful. And with 320 gigabytes of space on my drive, I can easily have a very simple, plain presentations in there and hook it up via HDMI or VGA and display them on a projector through a web browser. I mean, that's what browsers, in my opinion, are partially meant for. Presentating data.
Presenting.
Thank you. Presentating ideas, yep, through presenting.
There you go. And exactly. One of the questions that was given us by one of the listeners was, he was looking at getting a smaller laptop to take with him on business trips, and was asking if this is going to be a worthwhile device. Ultimately, it depends. Most people I know that are buying laptops for business, you know, they're buying it for like a corporate environment, and they have to have, you know, office, or they have to have this or have to have it that. If you're literally just doing emails and like document creation, then yes, I think this would be great. Because two of the sort of additional features they throw in are, Dor, do you remember the in-flight service, the name of it?
I believe it's called like GoGo.
Right, and you get, what, 10 free sessions?
10 free sessions does sound correct. Like 3 seconds here, and I got it.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a GoGo in-flight internet service, 12 free sessions. So this is like in-flight internet 12 times for completely free.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, still, I mean, that's thrown in for the $199 price point. And I will be flying out east somewhere to catch a ride somewhere to get to Nelf. So I will definitely try it. But overall, yeah, the offline experience with it has been really great because I have been able to add two docks and have them sync later, or create docks and have them sync later. So as long as you're used to the Google Chrome experience just through the browser, then you should be fine. Oh, you froze. Oh, there you go. Now you're back. What's up?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, good.
Your video is froze, but I can hear you.
Oh, clear. Yours just froze too. Nah, we're good. But yeah, so yeah, you get the 12 free sessions of GoGo in-flight internet service, and you also get 2 free years of 100 gig Google Drive access.
Right.
But here's my... Yeah, go ahead.
And I said to my buddy, I said, that's a dangerous freebie.
Yes.
You know, because you might get really used to that.
Mm-hmm. But here's the catch. And here's the one thing that I didn't really think about until I thought about it, I should say. and because I was trying to look for flaws, because you can't just talk up a device unless it's flawless, because nothing's flawless. The one thing I didn't like about that was this. When you're first signing in a device, like Dor said, you're basically signing into your Google account. You know, you're putting in your normal Google, your like Gmail address and your password. And then it runs you through, like, do you have a Google Plus account? Have you been using Google Drive before? And if you have, then it sort of does a verification that you have a device that will let you acquire this service. And then it lets you activate it. But other than that, there's no documentation in the box whatsoever about that 100 gigabyte Google Drive service.
Yeah.
So
I honestly believe, I'm thinking they're hoping 80%+ of people don't even see it, don't even cash it in, quote unquote.
Right. And I thought, you know what, that's kind of crappy. I mean, a good business decision. I understand it from a business standpoint, but the fact of the matter is, if it's, that's a huge deal for buying this device, because I mean, especially for the Samsung model, I mean, 16 gig SSD. I mean, yeah, you can slap an SD card into it, but if you have 100 gigs online cloud storage all the time, and you know Jonathan Nato, huge fan of the cloud, so he bought 10 of these.
Huge.
Huge fan of the cloud. That's going to be on his tombstone. Huge fan of the cloud.
Yep.
But to have it kind of, and it's not buried. It is in the open introduction when you're signing on to the device, but to me, it didn't go in depth. For let's say I bought one of these for my father as a present. I just gave it to him and I said, here you go. And he was familiar with Chrome. He may not ever know that. But if you took the time to explain to him, by the way, you have this 100 gigabytes of online storage for 2 years for free because you bought this device, and break it down, then he'll start, you know, throwing photos up there, throwing documents up there, because it's just one more safe, secure spot. Well, quote unquote, safe, secure, that he doesn't have to worry about it dying or getting stolen. But to not have any documentation to walk people through it, I thought was, much like you were saying, they're hoping a large portion of people who don't do it, much like a mail-in rebate type of situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that to me was a little bit of a fail. Like I said, I can understand it from a business standpoint, but it being one of the bigger features, especially on these two lower-end devices or cheaper devices, I think that if it was advertised and pushed a little bit more, because, and another thing you said too was, it's dangerous, is what happens, you know, 23 months from now, and you have 94 gigs on there. Mm-hmm. Are you going to clear it off? No, you're like, how much is that annually? Oh, yeah, exactly. I'll pay that. So, they could potentially gain customers down the road. Because, I mean, even if 20% of the people who get the 100 gigs for free end up being subscribers after the first 2 years, that's still a hell of a lot of money coming in for them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and to me, if I was them, I would have publicized it more, but that's just me.
Yeah. Because it's a great service, and I think it was on the last episode we covered, and I'll be covering it again soon, but there are some utilities within Linux you can use to access it on a different device. So it won't be limited to just your experience used on the Chromebook, because, I mean, you can't have enough cloud storage. I like to try out all the different services just to say I did. And just to say, you know what, I have these crucial files in one more spot, just in case.
Right.
So yeah, I was very, very little disappointed. But other than that, I mean, I'm very happy with it. And I know how to use Google Drive, so I wasn't affected by that. But still, one thing, if I had to tell Google, hey, you guys might have tried to do this a little bit better, that was it.
Right.
Okay. And then the Crow shell, the Chrome shell, did you try that door?
Yes and no. Yes, but... okay. You basically can't do anything. I mean, if you open it up and type help, I believe... You seriously get like a list of six commands you can do. Three of them are in regards of help and very isolated things inside the shell itself that are almost pointless. And then you have a ping command, which, to be honest, I use fairly frequently. When I tether, sometimes it seems like, oh, something's slowing down. Maybe something's downloading to my phone. Maybe the tether, quote unquote, broke. So I just hit Control Alt and T, bam, pull up the terminal really quick, the Chrome shell, type ping, space google.com, enter. And within a second or two, I see what, well, do I have to reset my tether or do I just have to be patient?
Right.
And out of 10 times, my tether might be broke twice. So instead of unnecessarily jumping the gun and breaking the tether and doing this, I just have to wait a couple seconds and then, oh, somebody was sending me a Voxer message. That's why my network speed slowed down. And then everything starts running fine. But you can also do SSH from the default Chrome shell. So you can remotely use this and SSH into another computer and have remote access that way and remote control capabilities from your Chromebook. I will say, if you go to the settings, settings, advanced, and then more, you can change what Chrome version you're running. And by that, I mean stable, I believe it's stable, unstable, and development. If you put it in development mode, you get a true full, I don't know if it's a bash terminal, but a full terminal with a lot of different commands that you can run. So I might do that for like a week before going to a full version of Linux just to experience it.
Yeah, I read up on that, but I just didn't do it. I was too busy just using it as is. So we kept them stock for now. Obviously, and yeah, Bodhi Linux is the one I'm going to try first, because it's super lightweight, uses E17, and based off Ubuntu. I love their normal releases. It's a slick interface. And then to see them, I think they even have a version for the Nexus 7, don't they?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so a lot of good stuff coming out of that camp, and to have something like, and I've read that the Ubuntu performance on these is pretty good, but not amazing, which you can't expect it to be amazing. It's a lower powered device, but
It's Unity, for God's sake.
That's right. It's Unity. But to have a lighter weight distro like Bodhi come out and say, you know what, we got this too, check it out. I'm going to do that first just to experience it. Now, I'll try that with the stock hardware, but I have a MacBook I'm going to cannibalize. And as far as hardware modifications, you can there's a variety of Lilliputing, of course, a great, great site for any sort of hardware or software hacking. They have some great breakdowns, great photos. One of the questions we got from one of our listeners was, how easy is it to upgrade the RAM? Just like any other laptop, it has those little flip-up wings that you just sort of click up, slide the DIMM into, and then click it down, just like you would in a normal laptop. Removing the sections of the backside, just like a normal laptop, because it's not micro-tiny where you need to disassemble like an entire, you know, half and then dig layers and get in. It's very, very simple. So yeah. I'm going to try to install Bodhi on it in the next week or two with the stock hardware. And then I have a 7200 RPM 500 gig drive. I'm going to slap in there and another couple gigs of RAM to double the RAM, and then have a faster hard drive. And then we'll see the performance on that, because I think it would just be cool. And 11.6 inch screen. We were talking about screens earlier, but right now, any of my laptops try to have them 14 or 13.3. The 11.6, I thought it's going to be kind of tiny, but it's great for that day-to-day, just like slap under my arm, walk around type of thing. So if you guys are hesitant about the screen size, don't be, because it's not tiny, it serves a great purpose. Overall, I was very, very happy with it.
Yeah, I had a Dell. I still have a Dell M1210 XPS. Technically speaking, this is bigger. Okay, even though that had a bigger quote unquote screen, this is bigger because it has a little bit more of a bevel around the outside, which also then means, technically speaking, you have more space for your keyboard. So even though this is an 11 inch screen, this is not a 11 inch keyboard, if you know what I mean.
Yep, there you go. And I think that was definitely a wise choice, because I've seen cramped keyboards, and typing on a cramped keyboard isn't a big deal. Typing fast on a cramped keyboard, that's a big deal, because you're
impossible.
Yes. Especially for guys like us with the sausagey fingers.
Yeah, I have a 7-inch case for my Nexus 7, and you pop it open and there's a keyboard right there.
Mm-hmm.
The keyboard is virtually unusable unless you literally use two fingers and that's it. If you peck the whole time, you can use it, but you ain't typing fast.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I found that usable in a pinch, but not comfortable at all. Where this thing, I felt just as, if not more comfortable on that than I did on a full size laptop or my desktop keyboard. To me, I felt just as comfortable.
And I'm glad you brought that up too, because one of the big things from what I've been reading, especially the media completely called this a garbage device. Like who's going to buy it?
Oh yeah.
Like number one rated device sold on podnuts.com/Amazon. I mean, the Google can't keep them in stock. They're doing so well.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the main reasons I was basically saying to myself, you know what, I don't need this, because for anything I think or anything I thought I wanted to do with it, I thought I could accomplish with my Nexus 7 and like a Bluetooth keyboard and a mouse with an OTG cable. And I'm like, dude, I mean, if I answer my emails on the fly, I can do that on my phone or on my Nexus, but I'd rather have a keyboard so I could type faster, get it done faster, save time. Thought that would be great. But then I realized, I'm looking at these keyboards. I'm like, those are kind of tiny. Mm-hmm. The tiny, tiny little keyboards. Like the one the door has are tiny, but it would be weird to have like a 10-inch long keyboard to be used on like a 7-inch tablet. You know, like you have it on a stand and kind of hunched over it. You know, just like really, really toiling away. But
if you really want to hear, feel this reference completely out, go look up the video called Digiman, I want to say it's called, 1980s television show. If you have a 7-inch screen and a 10-inch keyboard, you belong as being a guest on that show. And there will be a link in the notes to this show I'm talking about. I believe it's called Digiman, Digital Man. No, I can't remember. But here's my logic. On my phone, I use that keyboard a lot. Okay, on my tablet, I use that keyboard a lot. I find myself spending a lot of brain cycles thinking about typing instead of typing.
Yep.
Or on the Chromebook, I spend near zero time thinking about typing and just thinking about what words are coming next.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I type a lot on the phone, but it's still, I have to use extra thought. Maybe it's because I'm not 12 years old and I'm, you know, texting 40,000 times a month, but I'm just not that fast or not that fluent at it.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Like I said earlier, the keyboard is great. One of the things I forgot to mention, when we were talking about hardware, is the touchpad on this thing. Now, traditionally, when you think of these smaller laptops, you know, it's the like 75% devoted to touchpad and then the two little click buttons. And in my experience, especially with netbooks, once again, those buttons suck to press them way too hard or they're way too sensitive. But this is it's one solid trackpad, which is also itself one big button, which I thought was another huge plus. I mean, I opened this thing for the first time. It was just like all these things impressed me. And that was one of them.
Well, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I'm going to take a shot in the dark because I don't see these devices in the wild because I work for a place where people don't get paid a lot of money. Okay. The keyboard gave me the impression that it was almost Mac-like. Same thing with the touchpad. It was elegant. It was just a rectangle with squared corners and that was it. No lines separating two button stuff. It was just very clean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's how Macs look, but that's how I think they would look.
It is, considering you haven't seen one since what, 1985?
Something like that, yeah.
Fibber, anyway. And he's right. me, I'm one of those guys that goes for aesthetics, especially when I'm buying tech. My PC, whatever, it can be just some big garbage box, but anything I put in there is going to be good quality. But
I'm not a fibber, okay? I haven't looked at a Mac since then. I've seen them. I don't look at them.
Okay.
There's a difference.
You don't put consideration into them, but you catch them out of the corner of your eye.
Ah, yeah, there's a piece of crap.
There you go. But and what DeWar said about that, the combination of the keyboard and the touchpad was Mac-like in the fact that, say what you want about Apple as a company, their hardware is pleasing to the eye, and it's nice to use.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, in years past, HP, Lenovo, Dell, they're starting to implement the quote-unquote chiclet-type keyboards, and then the single trackpad, much like on this. And just because if you ask 9 out of 10 people, they would go, well, yeah, I'd rather use that. Not just because of the way it looks, but the way it actually feels and operates as well. Because instead of having to use, like, put two fingers down on the pad to differentiate right and left click, and then having to move them up, I mean, it's just one big surface. Huge plus there. Having all the keys, almost all the keys, the same size, same distance apart, and actually having distance between them, yes, that's a plus as well. Having on a device like this, I was just completely over the moon happy to see that type. But yeah, I just bought my wife a new Lenovo laptop 2-3 months ago. Same thing. And she loves it. So yeah, as far as laptops that are selling well or that people like, I see that trend happening more and more. And to see both of those things integrated into this lower end device, I was very pleased.
Yeah, I'll say the only key I found myself having to look for a couple times were the arrow keys, and that's because the right and left were half height key.
Yeah.
That was the only key I found myself actively having to turn my head down and look and then click. But after, I would say a few hours of playing with it, I had them memorized physically where they were at.
Yeah, some keys toward the either end of the keyboard are a little smaller, or half keys, two-thirds keys, scrunched up. But yeah, it just like any other keyboard, after a while, you just get used to it. But you didn't have to, at least I didn't have to think of it as a super cramped keyboard and always look down to make sure I'm typing the right thing or to search for this key or that key. It was just instinctual after a few minutes.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you got anything else on this door?
I would honestly encourage people, kind of like what Cody said, think about it rationally. And if you think you're okay with having this browser, quote unquote, experience, I highly, highly doubt you're going to be discouraged. And then I'll say, if you're open to lighter Linux desktops, I'm going to be desperately shocked if a Linux distribution doesn't run fine on this. I'm not going to say runs good or great, but runs fine on it with a lighter desktop, because 2 gigs of RAM, that's more RAM than I had in most of my computers. And by that, what I mean is six months ago, if you would have added up all the RAM in all my computers, it might've been 2.5 gigs, and that's 5 computers. So 2 gigs should be plenty for a lighter Linux desktop.
I couldn't agree more. As a stock device, I mean, if you did nothing to it, I still think it's a heck of a bargain and it's a great device. But the fact that I can enjoy it this much, and that I didn't think I would, I honestly thought it would be a day. I'd remove the factory seal on its way out of the box. I would just slap something on there and go to town. But yeah, I didn't, and that's why I was surprised. Because you guys know the two of us. I mean, we do all sorts of stuff to our hardware. Yeah. But stock, a heck of a value, but to think that you can go above and beyond that, make it your own device, do customizations, hardware and software-wise, through different Linux distros, adding in RAM, different hard drives, not to mention the SD card capabilities for carrying around extra audio or video locally instead of relying on the cloud service. For that money, man, you just cannot beat it.
Yeah, concur, agree.
So if you're hesitant at all, listen to us and at least consider it. I mean, here's the one thing I will say too. If it's going to be your only machine No.
You might get really upset.
Yep. I'm honestly thinking about buying one of those Chrome boxes for my dad, because they have a they have a little desktop version, because literally all he wants to do is web surfing and email. And at that value, I mean, he has the HDMI out, slap it into like his 24-inch monitor on his desk, he'd be perfect. I mean, he'd be completely set.
Right. Yeah, I almost forgot. This is a quote-unquote near uninfectable computer. Mm-hmm. And here's the reason why. Just like the CR48 I had at boot time, it does a integrity check. If that integrity check is not up to snuff, it will basically do a factory reset on itself. So even if an infection gets by, supposedly the very next reboot, it will basically flip a switch and go back to being like fresh out of the box, which the whole point of this device is I could have 10 Chromebooks, okay? And every morning somebody plays a shell game and shuffles them all around. And then I take one, I open it up, I log in. I'm going to have the basic exact same experience on all of them. So it doesn't matter if this is my quote unquote normal device. As long as I log in with the same credentials, I should have a seamless experience across them.
That's very true.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it factory resets. It almost doesn't matter at all.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be especially useful for when we do start playing with them, as far as adding new software on them. And we're both not necessarily committing to it, but we're going to do it. And we'll do a follow-up on that soon. I'd rather get it out there sooner than later, just in case you guys are still on the fence. But yeah, if it's going to be your only machine or like your only mobile device, maybe not. But like a company with a small tablet or a phone, I mean, the two of them work together really well, or just by itself, as kind of we've said. I mean, it's a great experience. So if you got the cash on hand, or you're looking for something that you feel that just the Chrome OS will suit your needs, I guarantee you're probably gonna be happy with it. But if you go the above and beyond and make it your own device a little bit more, you're gonna be wringing out even much more value out of it. So
yeah, in hindsight, I think I'm gonna first go with a Linux on it, and then later in a couple weeks probably switch it back and go to dev mode.
There you go.
That's the order of operation I think I'm going to go for.
So how about this? How about as we do these things, we'll post Google Plus updates, and then we'll get a consolidated review on what we've done as far as hardware and software within the next 2-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, next week we have Kevin O'Brien on.
Mm-hmm.
The week after, we might have some guy with some issues maybe with his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has a hard time seeing straight, I'll say. And we're going to try to have him on pretty soon, I think.
I think that's just a myth about him, because I gave him a lot of high fives in person. So I think it's BS.
Okay. Well, that, and he also might be suffering from tummy aches because of his anxiety over his Windows devices. His Windows 7 mobile phone, 7.
7 series phone. 7 phone, 7 series yeah, phone.
Exactly.
Yep.
I hear he has like 4 of them.
Well, the only reason he has 4 of them is because when he bought the one Nokia Lumia for a penny, he got 3 free. So
that explains it. He's a Nokia lover.
Oh yeah. Anything closed source, the guy is just above and beyond.
Or cloudy.
Yep.
Yes.
In fact, he doesn't watch It's Sunny in Philadelphia because he doesn't like the fact there's no clouds in the show.
Exactly.
It's always sunny in Philadelphia. Oh yeah, so yeah, the next 2 week shows are pretty much planned, but shortly after that, or we might even dare I say, and I may be speaking out of bounds here, but if we throw in like a half episode or like a special update into the feed and you guys just don't expect it on a normal release basis, that just might happen. So keep your eyes out for that. Very cool. All right, so let's roll right into the emails, since we have quite a few of those. And for those of you who sent them in, thank you so much. We have quite a backlog of them, and Dor and I toyed with the idea of getting rid of all the 2012 emails and just starting the year fresh, but we'd be here for another 2 hours. So we're gonna bang through quite a few of them. We got a couple of voicemails, and then we'll sift through the rest of them soon, because I always made a commitment to at least get through some emails, voicemails every show, because trust me, I know what it's like to send it in and to just want to hear it on the show. And I don't want to let those people down. So we'll always do that.
Gotcha. All right.
So first email from Chris Finch writes, hello, Cody. I love the show. I have a quick question for you. What is the name of the Raspberry Pi case you will have at your side for the zombie apocalypse? Keep up the good work on the show. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Thanks, Chris Finch. I actually answered Chris. That is, of course, the Raspberry Pi case made by Cook Tech Inc., which, of course, our good friend Russ Winter, one of his former employers. He still does consultant work for them. If you're looking for that case, if you have a Raspberry Pi or thinking about getting one and want a good quality case, go on to eBay and go to the advanced search mode. And under seller, just type in Cook Tech Inc. That's COOKTECHINC, as in Cook Technology Incorporated. It's the only item they sell on there. I think they're like $23.95, $24.95. But yeah, and if you want to hear my testimonials on that, just listen to past episodes. I talk highly about it. Could not agree with it more.
I didn't know that this advanced search let you search like that. That's cool.
Yeah. You could search by seller, end time, region, or like within so many hundred miles of where you live. All sorts of things. Because, I mean, you know how it is, man. Like, I'll go on, I'll be looking for like an action figure or like a video game or, cables, OTG cables or something. And if you want something quicker, you look for, or if you know like a reliable seller you've dealt with in the past, but you forgot their name, there's all sorts of ways you can go on there and then sort of narrow it down and just make it a better experience. So yeah, try eBay Advanced Search.
Very cool, man. I'm not going to lie, I haven't really been on eBay a lot. I typically just do the one search, scroll, you know, 20 pages later, I find what I'm looking for and then I'm done. So this would have probably made my searching much easier.
Well, Dor, plan ahead next time and just use advanced search.
How do you spell that?
PLANSEARCH.
Got it.
Moving on. Daryl writes in response to our discussion on money management software. Great show, guys. And I just want to let you know that I'm using a program called Money Dance. It's available in Windows, Mac, and best of all, Linux. I have used it in Windows for many years and recently in Linux. I have tried KMoney and GNU Cash, and they are night and day behind Money Dance. Check out their free trial and let me know what you think. I also use Myth TV all the time. I use Myth Ubuntu and have three HD home runs with cable cards, so I have a 9 cable card tuners, and they work. And they work awesome, Daryl. Daryl, I think you need to tone it down, brother.
Dude, he ain't playing around, is he?
I can see. Here's where I picture Daryl. He's sitting down in his basement. He has all these huge TVs, and he's watching like nine different like newscasts at once, and like, you know, Comedy Central. He's got a couple movies playing, you know, like a couple sports games, and he's sitting there with one of those big like fold out foil things, and he's in like a lawn chair, and he's getting a tan from the screens, and the whole time he doesn't even care. He goes, it doesn't matter if I'm watching it all now because it's all being recorded live and being backed up. It doesn't even matter.
Right. That's awesome.
So awesome, Daryl, be sure to use the tanning lotion. And I mean, you use the sunscreen. I don't want you getting burned up because I want you to listen to the show every week. And you can't do that if you're dehydrated. You can't move. You need to grab that mouse. Click play. Can't do that if you can't move, brother. But thank you very much, Daryl.
Well, did you take a look at this Money Dance?
I remember checking out the website, but I did not download it because I myself have made a ridiculously customized Excel, well, a spreadsheet document, I should say, because I don't use Microsoft Word. I use LibreOffice for my personal money management. But I got to tell you, once you guys unlock or basically step out of your own way as far as when it comes to dealing with your finances, a whole new world opens up. So definitely, I mean, he speaks very highly of it. It got good reviews online. So check out Money Dance. Did you download it or try it, Dor?
I didn't check it out because my wife won't let me deal with money, but I will say this. Okay. I think I read this and this was actually a quote-unquote free piece of software, as in free software. Let me say that correctly. It's like GPL software, I think, thank fault. Now I can't find it. But here was the thing that I asked him about. I said, wait a minute. This thing says purchase and download, okay? I go to purchase, okay? And it says, for personal use, people who use Money Dance should buy one license per household, no matter how many computers you install it on, operating system you use, people who use Money Dance, or data files that you create. They're almost implying you don't have to buy it by that. And I go look at the version you can download right now or the version you can get at the purchase page. I don't see anything different about them. And this is available on Windows, Mac, and Linux. That's why they said it didn't matter which OS that you install it on.
How much is it?
It really wasn't a bad price. I know I went and hit it. I want to say it was like $40, $49.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, if you guys are looking for $49. Something like this, give it a try. And if it is worthwhile, just like anything else. I mean, because, you know, I've donated to like Audacity and to other free software projects, because after I used their product for a while, I thought, you know what, this is actually making my computer experience better. It's benefiting me. So why not help them help others in the future and make their product better by throwing them a little bit of cash? So yeah, try this out. If it works for you, yeah, kick them some dough, buy a license.
Well, and I'll say, I've had multiple emails with Daryl in the past. Okay. This is not just some random guy. This is not some marketer from Money Dance talking to us. This is a real guy, first and foremost, that thought a piece of software was good enough. He willingly went out and paid for it. And then after paying for it, he promotes it to us. To me, that's saying it's not only good software, it's not only worth the $49, but it's still worth more that he's talking good about it. So to me, that's like a triple endorsement. That's something I rarely see people do on any operating system. Mm-hmm. Usually when they talk about paid software, they're like, and I had to buy this kind of attitude.
Right. And here's 10 things I don't like about it.
Right. This is really good software and you should check it out.
That's very true. Yeah. Because, I mean, you guys know, especially with free software and then with Linux, we have a huge variety of options. Mm-hmm. And if you find something that you really like, and then you're willing to pay for it, and then you're willing to tell your friends and family about it, yeah, it's above and beyond. So thank you, Daryl. I will definitely check it out in the next couple weeks, because I like exploring options. So we'll definitely give it a look. And thank you for writing in. And once again, SPF 300 minimum. Sounds like you're getting quite a bit of fake sun there.
Yeah, and I'll say Cody says that because he cares.
I do. I do care. Not that we need every listener, but because I care. I totally do care. All right. Our good friend Martin Obando writes, he's in the chat right now. He's tuning in extra hard right now because he really wants to hear this. Martin wrote in, last night you had an email from a listener who wanted to know if there was a way to view what has been installed via command line versus GUI. All typed entries into the terminal are kept in your .bash_history file. This can be found in /home/username. At least that is where it is under my Ubuntu box. It may be located in another location in other distros. By default, this is a 500-line history. If you have 500 lines already and add one more, the oldest gets dumped. You can turn off the 500-line limit by typing unset hist size and unset hist file size in the terminal. We'll just kind of open it up, I guess. I asked around to my Linux system admin friends, and they have not seen this question before and are not sure it can be done. So it looks like the best way for him to tell what has been installed is to look at the /home/username.bash_history file. In a terminal, type history, and you will see your history. Maybe other people smarter than me will have a better option. Martin.
Well, I'll just throw in one quick thing that I seriously learned less than 2 weeks ago by I can't remember who. On the Mumble server OpenSpeak, but this is a good trick needed exactly for this task. If you want to see everything that's been installed via the command line and it still exists in your history, that's the caveat. Go into a normal bash type terminal, control and R will start to do a search, a reverse lookup search. So if you type apt-get inst apt-get install, it will go to the last time that command was typed. And you'll see the whole command, sudo apt-get install Audacity or whatever. And then if you keep tapping control and R, it will keep going back in time at the previous time that command was, that text was entered. So okay. You could literally, if it was a fresher install and you didn't hit that 500 line limit yet, you could literally hit Control R, APT-GET space INST, and then Control RRRR and see everything that you installed really quickly on the command line.
Very cool. It's almost kind of what I do when I'm looking, well, especially when I go through the Android App Addicts document. Imagine like a huge text doc, and you know, you Control F to find, and you search for, you know, the whatever keyword, and then it brings up all the options. You can just cycle through them. Now, correct right. me if I'm wrong. I remember this being brought up in a previous show, but I forget the context it was brought up in. My first inclination that this might be useful for, let's say you're doing a lot of distro hopping and you did a lot of installations via the command line, but you forgot what they were and you mm-hmm. don't have access to the resource where you found out what it was. This way you can go maybe collect them in a text document for the next time you install something else and just slap them in there right off the bat and then be up to speed again. Am I right?
Well, yeah. And here's the big thing. Here's a plus to why you should install things via the command line. Why you should actively, quote unquote, go out of your way and install things on the command line, because it's auditable, because it's documented, because mm-hmm. you can actually see the paper trail, quote unquote. And what you can do is after a month or so, go through, get all those applications, copy them out into a text file and make one long sudo apt get. And then the next time you reinstall, you just have to issue one command and voila. You have everything installed once again without having to jump through hoops.
That's awesome. So, yeah, wait.
Martin brought up a very good point.
Real quick, I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but run me through that again. Did I hear you right? Where you can you just copy, like if I had a text file of all that, can I just copy paste that into the terminal and run them all simultaneously? Is that what you meant?
Well, essentially, yes. But what you have to do is say sudo apt-get install space. Audacity space.
Oh, culture, I get you.
Space okay. mumble.
So you could yeah. So create basically one long command.
Yeah.
As a reference, and then just slap that in there. That's awesome. Yeah. Because when I'm trying new distros and I'm not familiar with their like software center or how I'm supposed to be getting applications, I usually just drop the command line, get my essential apps in there. Because I mean I'm no command line guru, but I know how to type stuff. So. Yeah, definitely. Awesome. And thank you, Martin, for that. That's just going to help him and many other people in the future. And I'm totally going to use that. Now I have a new doc I need to create. Thanks a lot, guys. All right. So next, David Zick writes, I continue to listen every week. You and Cody first, then Mintcast, and if I have time, going Linux and Linux Basics. But I run out of drive time and really should spend time on my own professional material. Anyway, I was playing with Crunchbang yesterday, another neat distro. Also, Kupfer, what a great little tool. It makes a lot of the discussions about competing desktops much overrated, since this one tool can take care of about 90% of what people use computer for anyway. I know you're much more of a doer than a reader, but I heard that about Linux Format Magazine on Mintcast, I think. I subscribed electronically on my Nook Color, good for reading while spouse is sleeping. Oh, yeah. Anyway, what a great font of information. They have such a wide range of articles that fill out the background on so many things. You might give them a mention or maybe have, and I did not remember, you have and I didn't remember. Cody's doing a great job and I'm appreciating his knowledge in the newer phase of Linux, the rest of us. Continuing, great thanks, and I hope you have a wonderful Christmas with your family. David Zick. Well, thank you, gotcha. David.
Yeah, I'm not a reader at all. I've had more than a couple of people, again, go out of their way to speak very highly about Linux Format Magazine. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at one or two articles they've done, because I think 2 or 3 months after something's quote unquote printed, either some of it or all of it gets released free and anybody can look at it. And I will say everything I saw was very thorough, very like concisely documented. Like their articles weren't short. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? They were definitely in-depth. Now, I will say, obviously, they're biased fellows, which they hardly say, this is Linux Format Magazine. We're going to promote Linux. Yep. We're going to talk about all the benefits of Linux. And they do a really good job with it, to be honest.
Yeah, I've actually picked it up before. When I first started getting into it, and really when I first started getting into anything, whether it was, I don't know, like paintball or when I was first starting to buy Mac stuff or writing, whatever, man, I just loaded up on periodicals, physical periodicals, so I could have something to carry on me all the time. And this is years ago, before tablets or smartphones or whatever. But every time I go to Fry's, and Martin, me and you, we got a date, man. Every time I go to Fry's, electronics, huge electronics store, they have their magazine section. They have, at least 10 Linux magazines. And I love seeing that. I'm just like, man, this is awesome. Because, yes, they're still in print, but awesome articles. Yeah, you might be able to find them online somewhere, but buy it, support them. They usually come with the disks, too, with a good software, good distros on there. So you're getting a good deal both ways. But, yeah, Linux Format, great magazine. Definitely check them out if you're looking for something to read on the go. Some of those mags like that and Linux Journal when it was in print, I still subscribe to it digitally, but it's also good because you're not actively searching out for one piece of information, like a review on this distro or how this piece of Linux-based hardware works well. It's great to be able to open up something like that and look at the, yeah, there's these two articles I remember, these two articles I really want to read, but then there's all this other stuff. So you might get turned on to certain things you didn't even know about. Or you might read an article, you know, that's way above my head. Maybe I'll do a little bit of research and educate myself, and then you just become better. So give them a try, because that happened with me on a few different occasions. So very, very worthwhile. And thank you, David, for sending that in.
Very cool stuff.
Our good friend Knucklehead Tech writes in, and this is in reference to the INXI for CPU flags to determine if you have PAE enabled. I added door because I wasn't sure if I remembered the email address was correct. So to get the flags in the best human readable format, use the bash script INXI. Some distros have it pre-installed, but many do not. To read about it, you can find it in a Google code page, and we'll provide some links in the show notes. There's also a wiki for help along with installation. And then he adds, then for some helpful reading after you get it installed and you run INXI-C, you can refer to this page to determine what your CPU flags mean. Once again, another link, which we'll provide in the show notes. Now, yeah. Some people might think this is dumb, and I would recommend using a script that doesn't always come pre-installed. But the beauty of using Linux Live Disk is that you can install whatever you need, provided if you have an internet connection. I have booted into Windows machine to a live disk and installed INXI, Gpart, and many other tools for troubleshooting, gathering info, cracking Windows SAM file, passwords, and so on. In my experience, there is no better hardware script command line than INXI out there. Hope this helps, Knucklehead Tech.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Knuckle told me about this two or three times in the last, like, 3 or 4 months. He did, but that's cool. And then move on. And then, you know, he would tell me about it again. Because he's Knucklehead Tech. He's so easy to ignore. But if you also, I'll put a link in there to the Podnuts forum. He also posted screenshots of this. And this, to me, is like the super censure, which I don't like saying the word censure, but it's the censure to why you have to run this. And I'm really tempted, to be honest, to have as my desktop background, have this printout, just so at the drop of a dime, I can minimize all my windows and I can see the exact model number of my processor, speed of it, the flags, does it have the virtual PAE enabled or not? I'll see my graphics card, exact model, exact drivers, same thing with the audio and the network and the drive and the partition and if RAID is and the sensors for temperature and processor speed. I also like the fact, I'm not going to lie, things are intelligently color highlighted.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I just thought that was a really good touch that just made me want this to be available at a whim.
And as a quick side note, and I can't believe I forgot about this in my Chromebook discussion, and I have yet to try this, but some people have hardware hacked it have already like slapped 16 gigs of RAM into it, like two 8 gig sticks, at which point you go, why? Well, because the Chromebook itself is PAE enabled. Hypothetically, like say you have a YouTube browser window open, and then you're also streaming some audio, or you're doing like, you know, Google Maps or all this high-end stuff, it will actually allocate RAM to each browser window.
Nice.
So that's the reason to slap more. I mean, obviously, you know, not a lot of people are going to be using up that much all the time, but just to know that it's possible on that device, another plus on that huge list of great reasons to buy it. So yeah, check it out. And you can get about 16 gigs of RAM right now for about $78, which is almost half the cost of the device, but still, I mean, it's there. We can
do it.
That's
a fair price.
Yeah. You're going to need to go to Tim's Computer Fix and buy like one of those LED fans.
I don't know if I want to go there.
No.
Yeah, I heard he's a little shady.
But he has the blue LED laptop fans.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Yeah.
It's all good.
They're blue LEDs, so they're better. But yeah, because right. I'm sure that's going to heat up the device significantly. So make sure it's on a metal sheet on top of your lap. Otherwise, your boys might get toasty.
Exactly.
Or your ladies, if you're a lady, which you might be. We have a lady that wrote an email. We'll read her email later. Okay. Next email, our good friend Patrick Archibald writes in, giving us some insight in his experience with Lightman 17. He speaks about what he recently installed it on, his Lenovo X1 Carbon laptop running Ubuntu 12.10 on Christmas Eve. Man, this guy's hardcore. So yeah. His initial impression, Enlightenment is beautiful, quick, nimble, and highly customizable. The file manager is slick. Keyboard bindings are easy to set up. I'm big on keyboard shortcuts, so am I. The GTK apps are not so beautiful, but are tolerable. Terminology is the fancy new terminal emulator that intrigues me. I will be exploring terminology some more. The problems. After adding GIMP or terminal to the favorites menu, Enlightenment crashes with segmentation fault. So I'm staying away from the favorites menu. Yeah, that's not so great. Bottom line, I will continue to use Enlightenment 17 a little while longer. This documentation page, which we will provide a link in the show notes, is a good read. Below are a couple of great paragraphs from that page. The developers seem to have a great attitude. The developers write, E17 is smaller, lighter, faster, nicer, and more flexible than your current window manager, and it's old school with a new school twist. This trendy and fashionable. You will simply be totally uncool if you don't use it. Its farts smell of roses, and world peace has been known to be solved by E17. Okay, just kidding. Though really, they do smell of roses. And for the tweaker heads among you, there's an option for every occasion. We don't go quietly into the night and remove options when no one is looking. None of those big new version releases with fanfare. And, hey, look, now with half the options you used to have. We sneak in when you least expect it and plant a whole forest of new option seeds, watching them spring to life. We nail new options to walls on a regular basis. We bake option cakes on and hand them out at parties. Options are good. Options are awesome. We have lots of them. Spend some quality time getting to know your new garden of options in E17. It may be just finally give you the control you have been pining for.
Yeah.
Patrick Archibald.
Now I will say I did proposition Patrick to write me something because 12/21/12 Apocalypse Day was the release day of this version of E17. And this is the first quote unquote 1.0 release. Which I still don't think it's 1.0. I actually think it's 0.9999 dot something, 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 something. But this is a very heavily anticipated release of this desktop environment. And I will say that was a direct dig at GNOME and the GNOME desktop taking away a lot of features. In my opinion, some very nice, pleasing, pleasant, easy to use features. And leaving users abandoned, where E17 is a totally opposite approach. It is a traditional style desktop with new school abilities and twists, as it says.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's something I don't know if you're aware of, Cody, and I seriously just became aware of it like 2 weeks ago. Okay, Enlightenment used to be E16 beforehand, yada, yada, yada. It was basically dead on the vine. It was forgotten about. It was getting no updates. It was getting no nothing. And then like a year and a half ago, it sprung back to life. And it started rolling forward and it got more momentum and it got more activity. Well, it turns out your friend and mine, Samsung, the largest mobile manufacturer in the world, okay? Mm-hmm. No one's close to Samsung. Samsung turned into a major contributor to E17 Enlightenment. They want to see Enlightenment succeed. They want to put Enlightenment on phones. They've said that in press releases. They want E17. And the reason being, in my logic, is it is insanely light and near insanely customizable. I'm not going to say it's the desktop of the future because that's way too hokey. What I will say, it is a dang good desktop that takes just a touch of getting used to. It still isn't perfect, like he said about the favorites menu. It isn't perfect, but I really encourage people to, at least in a live environment, download the latest Bodhi Linux that has the latest E17 on it, boot to the live disk, and go through that live environment and play with E17. I am personally very, very impressed by this desktop, and I'm going to try to use this desktop. There's a couple keyboard commands that are different, like Alt and F4 is not close window. Alt and F4 is to go to the fourth desktop, and then Alt and F3 is the third desktop, and Alt and F2 is the second desktop, and Alt and F1 is the first desktop. So there's a little bit of keyboard differences like that. They're not hard to learn.
That is cool. And yeah, if you guys are, if you guys have an older laptop, or you're just, maybe your current distro is just a little too heavy, a little too sluggish, and you want to try it. And, honestly, this explanation of, and thank you very much, Patrick. That was a good in-depth review, and based on your experience, and I do appreciate it. It was good and helpful. But, I would say Enlightenment's, the developer's explanation of how their environment looks doesn't do Bodhi justice.
Yeah.
Go look at some screenshots of the new Bodhi Linux and you'll just, oh man, it looks slick, and you'll immediately download it. So yeah, the fact that I can throw that on this Chromebook, that I can throw it on my Nexus 7. Yeah. I think the Bodhi, and I think Bodhi is in top 20, top 15 on DistroWatch currently, and has been hanging there for quite a while. So definitely making their way up the rank.
It was in the top 5.
Really?
Yeah. Positively. Wow.
Yeah, and I've installed them before. One of their releases was mirrored with a Peppermint OS release about a year and a half ago. I installed them both, and man, they're both super slick.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much, Patrick. I do appreciate that. And now that I finally got to... Oh, Bodhi, yeah, 15 right now on DistroWatch on Tuesday, January 8th, 7:37 p.m. Pacific time.
Gotcha, yeah. On Sunday, I want to say it was actually number 4, because it was less than 2 days after a release.
Nice. Oh yes, you're going to obviously see a huge surge of downloads, but still, a lighter weight distro being the top 20 out of, you know, all of them that they're tracking on there, that's still pretty impressive. So yeah. Man, I'm putting that on. I'm gonna install that tonight. Goodbye, Fedora. Goodbye, Fedora XFCE.
Don't say that too loud. Fedora fanboys might like come and egg your house.
It's not that I don't like Fedora. It's that I have this one testing laptop. Fedora's currently on it, and I want to try Bodhi tonight. Dude, I have a Beefy Miracle sticker that's going to go on this sucker real quick. Who doesn't love that little hot dog?
I know, but I'm telling you right now, you better make it clear. Fedora, it's not you. It's me. It's not you. It's me.
This is going to sound petty. Maybe not petty, but stupid. One of the reasons I really love Fedora, it's blue.
Very blue, yes.
Love the color. I'm red green colorblind. So man, when I boot up Fedora or like Lubuntu, I'm just like, oh, I feel like I'm home. And I do. I just feel comfortable, right? And it's right. So stupid because like if it was like yellow, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, Fedora. But no. I've grown to love it over the past couple of weeks. But I got to try something new. I don't keep anything on this thing long anymore. That's my 2013 resolution. I'm not sticking with no distro on my testing machines for 18 months again, like an idiot.
I have a New Year's resolution too.
Oh, let's hear it.
1200 by 800. Sorry, couldn't help it.
Mine is 1920 by 1080.
Yeah, mine's a load number.
It's 1920 by 1200. Yeah.
I'm kind of blind, so
there you go. Yeah. Well, if I only had a Retina display, it could be 50,000 by 1400. but I haven't gone to Steve Cherubino's house to buy his old hardware yet. So maybe next year.
Right.
Moving on. I believe, this is the last email. Is that right? Let me scroll back down to it. Last email we have for today. And we always get a bunch of good emails, but we're still, and I love this when I first started hosting, I said, I want to hear, you know, about kids and Linux. I want to hear about this, I want to hear about that. And we're still getting people listening to the back catalog and throwing us emails about this. Ashley wrote in, and this just put a smile on my face. And Dor and I thought along the same lines, and we'll talk about his response here in just a second. But Ashley wrote in, she said, Cody and Steve, good afternoon and happy New Year's, gents. Now, Ash here, longtime listener, first time emailer. Cody was talking about children and technology a few shows ago. I wanted to see what you guys thought about this. I am a systems administrator with a Windows SAN VM growing Linux experience. I have two daughters, one 4 and the other 7. I've been trying to figure out how to best get the kids to learn technology. Currently, they have their own Android tablets running Ice Cream Sandwich, but are locked down with Zoodle's kid software. I am starting to think that only allowing them to access one small part of the Android ecosystem is not good, but it does help them when they need tech support. Just hit the home button. That's it. That's all they got to do in that environment. They both have their own little Roku devices in their rooms, and they share their own Netflix account. I just started to teach them how to navigate the Plex channel on the Roku. Jeez.
Dude, right there, I want to say, Ashley is the mother of the year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll finish the email and then we'll talk all about this because this is a bunch of awesome stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I thought to myself, how can I get them their own desktop environments? Easy enough. I can get these old PCs. She has an old P3 and an old P4 and install Puppy Linux. My kids will have a desktop computer and I can start, and they can start to use and learn Linux. Then days later, I started thinking further about my decision to push them towards Linux. I started to take into consideration they will be forced in to use it in school. What they will be forced to use in school, excuse me. I want my kids to be above the curve when it comes to technology, giving them a competitive edge over other kids. The computers in schools now are Microsoft XP based and not Linux based. I started to realize that I might be doing them a disservice pushing Linux on them while all the other kids are learning Microsoft XP. While I do want my kids to use and learn Linux, I think that it might need to wait until they have the basics of the school's computers down first. For the record, yes, I am that geek that is trying to make little geek children. Big smiley face. Also, I discovered that teachers were sending all the kids to Flash-based websites to do learning games. We all know how amazing, well, Flash works on Linux. For the time being, I have a quantity of 2 5-year-old laptops, one running XP and the other Vista. Boo. I am hoping that this will allow them to learn the navigation of the Microsoft operating system, and then I can move them onto Linux. Just thought I would share my kids and technology situation. Interested in seeing what others think. I love the show, and I listen to all the Linux for the rest of us podcasts to and from work in just about 2 months. Awesome. I'm moving on to Podnuts Pro and Linux Outlaws. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to the next show. Ashley.
Very cool.
Ashley, cool. Oh yeah, no, first of all, yeah, let's just go down the list here. Yeah, first of all, okay, tech mother of the year. Mm-hmm. When I heard each of these kids have their own Roku, I thought what the heck? But then I look at my son and the crap he has access to, I'm like, yeah, all right. But yeah, you can get some of those lower end, I mean, like the lower one, I think it's lower end, what, XS or you can get a Roku, like Radio Shack, for like, or podnuts.com/Amazon for like $39-$49 now.
Yep. Yeah. And her daughters are 4 and 7.
Yeah.
My sons are 4 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. There's nothing more than I would like than my sons to have mother-in-laws that are technologically savvy.
Yep.
Let me just say that. You know, so Ashley, play date, you know, we can play date.
There you go. Yeah. let's just kind of go down the line here. First of all, yeah, having them being able to navigate different interfaces, you're already doing them a service there. So with the Roku, fantastic. I agree with you when you're talking about the sort of locked down Android tablets. In fact, I work in retail and I talked with a bunch of customers this holiday season because where I work, we sell a variety of tablets, some of them lower end Android, some mid and high range, but none of those kids based ones. And I was trying to come up with like the pros and cons to them. And the big con is you're locked into that experience. Some of them are, they're running Android, but they're running their own spin of Android with their own app store. And you have to buy all the apps from them. And one of the main manufacturers, I can't remember which one it was, but one of the main manufacturers of one of these type of kids based Android tablets, like the day after Christmas, they went under. Yeah. So, I mean, hundreds of thousands of kids across the entire world were just left out in the cold because you can't just go to the Google Play Store and download what you want. You had to go through their app store and it was down. Their website was down. Their customer service was down. And eventually they're getting refunds. But it just goes to show you, you know, if you only have one place to go for what you need, you're doing yourself a disservice and potentially your kids. So I agree with you there. Get them, if you have to get them some tablets, or even maybe some old Android phones, just to get them used to interfacing with it or to using touchscreens. It can't hurt, but think of, and I think I spoke about this too on one of the other episodes referring to kids and technology, but I read a great study years ago where it was about sort of gauging children's comprehension early on in their academic career, lives, to where you don't want to teach a kid up to a certain point and then take them to a certain point and then take them to a certain point. You want to see what they're capable of. Give them the capability to learn way beyond where you think they should be. And if they get up there, then jump them that much farther ahead and that much farther ahead. That way, they're not just meeting where you think they should be. They're going above and beyond that.
Dude, I'll go for that.
Yeah. So I think that, with the Android tablets, yeah, get them something that you would use. That way, they're trying to come up to your level rather than being left behind on where the maker of that device thinks that your kids should be. Because you know where your kids should be. You know where you want your kids to be.
Right.
Go ahead, Dor.
No, I was going to say, I did throw out one thing to Ashley, and I first just mentioned it, but then I said, this doesn't do enough explaining. So I went and found a YouTube video, and I emailed Ashley this YouTube video, and what it is it's showing off what is called seamless RDP in Linux. Okay. The best way I can explain this is a technology that allows you to have a Linux computer, low end, low power, low spec, have a Windows VM on the same network on a more powerful computer, have a Linux desktop, but at the bottom of the desktop, you have yourself your Windows task panel, your start menu, all that at the very bottom. So you have an integrated environment where at the top you have your Ubuntu menu or your Linux Mint menu, you move to the top. And then at the bottom, you have yourself your Windows start menu. And you can actively, on the fly, go back and forth to either one you want to do whatever you need to get done. So I said, what about giving your children both environments and basically letting them actively on the fly pick what they want to use?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to explain it, but if you look at the video, you get it. You have basically, it's like a Mac Parallel Fusion, I think it's called Fusion.
Think about it as like running XP in a browser window on your Linux desktop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's perfect. And I Dor beat me to the punch. I was going to respond to her, but he beat me like an hour ahead. I was literally typing it out. But his initial reply to her was, think about how more capable children are of learning multiple languages when they're younger. Right. So learning multiple operating systems or desktop environments or whatever, you might as well throw them all in front of them early. And then because they're going to pick up pieces or they're going to be fluent in all of them, but limiting them to I'm not hating on Windows or whatever, but let's say that your public school system only focuses on one operating system, whatever it is, right? To make them more well-rounded, to make them future geeky kids, as you say you want to, they might as well be able to use all of them, or at least be able to at least navigate through any desktop environment, and they're only going to get that through experience. So put out there what you can in front of them, see what they latch onto. It's not that you're pushing Linux on them. It's that you're just making them more well-rounded computer users, in my opinion. And go ahead.
I was going to say, and what I would do personally, me being very OCD, I would go up to each of the kids independently. And I would say, okay, now pull up your computer. And if they do have the seamless RDP where they have both environments, mm-hmm. I'll say, okay, now for half of this delicious cookie, show me a way to do X.
There you go.
And they'll show you a way to do X and then say, okay, now for a whole cookie, show me a different way to do X.
And that's true.
And then if they get that, say, now for a cookie and a chocolate milk. Show me how to do X a different way again. You know what I mean? And I would seriously try to figure out a way to reward these kids on figuring out alternate ways or multiple ways of doing the same things. Because that's really what, in my opinion, operating system, being comfortable in OS, that's what I'm trying to say. Being comfortable in OS is the availability to do the exact same thing in multiple different ways. Mm-hmm. Because what if this one way is broke? Or what if now they change from Windows Vista to Windows 7 and now this one way is dead, but the other way still works? So you want them to be as aware of possible of as many ways to get the same things done, in my opinion, to make them geeky.
No, and that's true. You're just making them more well-rounded. And yeah, they're, because I mean, I don't know what your guys' experience is, but you know, I mainly grew up with Windows, but when I sat down in front of a Mac for the first time and then years later started using Linux, I mean, I could navigate to files, I could open programs just based on what I had used before, because right. It's all essentially the basic same operations. It's just where to go, what to click, what command to type in, where to find it. So right. Give them as much experience as you can, and then I think you'll be really surprised as to what they latch on to. Now, if they start to really, really like Windows, show them Windows 8 real quick, and then after they start crying, then have them, you know, start using like Ubuntu or something. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And honestly, I'd be tempted now. I'm sorry, it was a little girl, so maybe it should be turn around and say, look, I got this pair of Barbie Ruby slippers. Show me how to do this. And then after that, now I got a Barbie sports car. Show me how to do that. You know what I mean? And I would literally reward them. That's what I do now with my kids. I find something that they show any interest in and that I feel is productive for them to know. And I try my best to gently foster it by giving them things they like.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, Ashley, if you follow Dora's instructions with the cookies and the chocolate milk, you're going to have well-rounded children, literally, because they're going to be obese. But they're another way around multiple desktop environments, so that's good.
Right. So stick with the Barbie stuff.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Roku channels. Make it Roku channels.
There you go. Yeah, or Android apps. Man, there's all sorts of stuff we could do. Yeah. Ashley, and real quick aside, the one, and I think I mentioned this before, at least to Dor, but the one thing my son is having problems with, and he's only 17 months old, okay? He's having a problem with differentiating touch screens with non-touch screens. So, like, he'll be playing with my tablet, but then he'll want to go up on my laptop, and I literally start to, like, freak out if I see anyone touch an LCD, like, point, like, here, read this, and they're physically, they have their finger on it. I just want to slap them. When I see him do it, I have to restrain myself and just grab him and go, no. And use the keyboard, you know, that type of thing. So that's what I'm running into with him right now. But yeah, he's already grabbing the Xbox 360 controller and navigating Netflix, like moving stuff around. He doesn't quite know what he's doing yet, but he's getting the gist of it.
Right.
It's amazing. But very cool, Ashley, for sending that in. We do appreciate it. We do have a couple voicemails. Dor, do you want to play? Do you have the one from Jeff Owens queued up? There's one from Jeff Owens and one from someone else. Do you remember which one it is?
I know I have, I don't see it here. I don't see the Jeff Owens one. Yes, I do have the Jeff Owens one.
Okay. Well, I'm going to, find it. I just had it up too. Here we go. So yeah, Jeff Owens sent us a voicemail, but when Steve originally sent it to me last year, it was originally sent to me in the form of a Google transcript, which I think it's more of a rite of passage. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dor, but the host of a podcast should at least read one Google voice transcript on a show to like unlock that one more achievement as being a better host.
Right.
What do you think?
I think you're up for the challenge.
Okay. So what I'll do is I'll read the transcript, and as long as we labeled the voicemails correctly, the next voicemail we should play should be the actual voicemail of this transcript. This was sent in by our good friend Jeff Owens, aka Black Hammer. So here is what Google thought he said when he sent in this voicemail to Podnuts, Analytics, the rest of us. Jeff says, "Hi, this is or less for the rest of us, Black Hair. I have two questions. I heard you talking about us. We show up the money. Point alert. Java, despite strange, and I have the possible. The or virtual basic. Ramella next. I know lots of work. I have to do visual basic, and I were just wondering Wong Wei at all. My second question is in Windows control all police. This is what to do to reboot computer. Number one is the hopefully next O, and I said he shoots a couple of times with the loop onto the system I have. By the way, speaking of a bunch of you, thank you for your input store. I'm not running or will thinks full-time production systems at work. I've got one right now, but Spring Work Backup free program. Very complicated. I'm stopping. That's going back to you last, which you recommend that I think it back to you a little bit. I need. And I've got want to use some testing, and he just needs the run nothing before 2 o'clock. No, this is re I'll talk to you. Pretty. And I have to the park, but I'm wondering if there is some grades way or an alternative. Well, hi, super group. Good to see you on the show. Talk to you guys later, buddy. Five.
Oh, my God. I have no idea what that even supposed to say. And what's with the later, buddy, five?
Later, buddy. And then just the number five. That's five. All it's. Yeah. But my favorite. And you know what? Maybe this is Google reading between the lines, but that line, my second question is in Windows control all police.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a fact.
Maybe.
Maybe I get a bigger ticket if they see I have an Android phone and I get pulled over. I'll call up Captain Jonathan T. Nato, have him mail me one of those Nokia Lumias, and I'll have that as my device to hand off to the cops if they ask for it.
You'll be fine. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so the voicemail we play right now should be that one. We'll actually hear what Jeff was actually trying to ask us.
Well, or maybe this is what he was actually saying in the text, but the audio we're going to hear is how Google deciphered it.
That's correct. That's possible.
That's possible. Okay. If you need the volume up, just let me know.
Okay.
I'm launching it new.
Hi, this is for Linux for the rest of us. Black Hammer. I have two questions. I heard you talking about last week's show about Linux Link, about how they learned Java. Might be strange, it might not be possible, but will Visual Basic run on Linux? I have lots of work I have to do with Visual Basic, and I would just wonder if it would run on Linux at all. My second question is, in Windows, Control Alt Delete is what you would do to reboot a computer. What is the, what's the Linux, equivalent of this? I've had issues a couple times with an Ubuntu system I have. And by the way, speaking of Ubuntu, thank you for your influence store. I'm now running 4 Linux full-time production systems at work. I've got one right now that I'm starting to work a backup PC program. Very complicated. I'm stopping that to go to Bacula, which you recommended. I think Bacula will meet my need. And I've got one I use for testing, and he just seems to run nothing but VirtualBox. He'll just freeze once in a while, just freeze, and I have to hit the power button. But I'm wondering, is there some graceful way or an alternative? Well, hi, Supercoop. Good to see you on the show. Talk to you guys later, buddy. Bye.
I'm sorry. I had to literally focus on his words because I was focusing so hard on how bad Google translated it.
Yeah, I was reading along with the transcript as he was talking, and I was just like, oh my God, this is bad.
Yeah, they were so off.
Okay, well, first of all, Jeff, thank you for sending in the voicemail. We do really appreciate it. Door, is there a Linux alternative to control all delete to manually reset a machine, or at least have the option to do so if it locks up?
Well, there is, but there isn't, but there is. Okay, the typical old standard standby for Control-Alt-Delete equivalent, I'll say, because Control-Alt-Delete doesn't actually reboot your computer. Control-Alt-Delete is like a higher level acknowledgement that we need to do something above and beyond normal activity to where you can easily do other tasks. Okay. The closest thing to that in Linux is Control Alt Backspace, which Ubuntu has purposely disabled. Okay. Control Alt Backspace. What it will do is if you're in a GUI desktop and you're doing stuff and you hit that, it would automatically log you out and bring you back to the login screen. So if you have anything open and you're editing it, you will lose it. Okay. That's number one big warning. But in Ubuntu, you don't have that choice. So he needs something else. The alternate to that is even more powerful. Okay. This one is literally like holding the power button on your computer for 5 seconds. This is exactly the equivalent kind of thing. And that is Alt Sysrec, which is also on the print screen key. Sysrec is the key that nobody uses ever again. It has been used for 15 years.
And is that for system requests? Is that right? Is it REQ or REC? Because it's not on my keyboard.
I don't know. It's system REQ.
Oh, so probably request. Okay, got it.
I have no idea. All I know is it's Sysrec. That's all I know.
Okay.
You hold down Alt. Yeah, hold down Alt, Sysrec. And then I believe it's B. I'm positive B is for reboot. So if you want to reboot right now, bang, bang, boom, your computer's rebooting right now. Or Alt, Sysrec, and I believe S is shut down, and it is shut down right now.
Very cool.
So don't test it while you're doing a live podcast.
No.
The only thing I suggest to anyone out there, but I highly do encourage you to try it sometime. Just seriously. Just big, big, huh, and then, wow, that really does work, you know?
And for the record, yes, I know that Control Alt doesn't immediately reboot your system, brings up a task manager, and gives you some options. I know that.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I've used Windows that much. I'm not trying to bash, you know what I'm saying.
It's too easy.
Yeah. But I didn't know that. And you know what? Somebody, I think on Christmas Day on Google Plus, posted a list of like the top 100 best Linux keyboard shortcuts, a huge list of them. And I'm trying to go through those and learn them. Because, yeah, man, anything we do with the keyboard, instead of having to consciously reach over to the pointing device, whether it be a trackpad or trackball mouse. It's just going to make us that much more efficient in the long run. Yes, you're only saving seconds, but if you're doing it hundreds of thousands of times over the course of years, those seconds add to minutes, add to time. Bang.
That's a lot of commands to remember. I'll just say that.
Oh, well, depending on what your day-to-day operations are, you're going to use a handful of them, but it's going to make you that much better, you know. It's going to take time off of your everyday operations. So do it. Very cool. And we got one more voicemail queued up, and that volume level was fine, by the way.
Okay, here you go. Did I knock that over? And here we go.
Hey, guys. I'm new to the whole Linux scene, and I haven't actually made the switch yet, but I was thinking of starting out with Ubuntu. Can you give me some suggestions? On what application I should be downloading, how to go about doing it, basically a show for the beginner. Love the show. Thank you very much for all the work you do.
Okay. The nicest way I can put it, no. No. I can't do a show on beginners saying what applications you could install only because every single person out there is going to want to get different stuff done. And the guy didn't leave a name, so I don't know who it is. Mm-hmm. But I'll say, if you email me and say, hey, I need to get this task done, I will be more than happy within an hour or few to reply to you and give you some good ideas on what apps to run and where to learn more information about those apps. But there's no, this is what you should be running kind of thing. Now, I will say, as for OS is concerned, I still gritting my teeth say, if you have to ask that question, you should run Linux Mint. Only because it has certain things pre-installed for you where you do not have to worry about them. Like MP3 support, Flash support, things like that.
I agree. I actually just installed Mint, what is it, 14?
I don't know, I hate it.
Yeah, I just wanted to get something on my main box because I needed something stable for podcasting like immediately. And I've used Mint before, but I would say if you're going to go with anything to start out with, several people suggest Ubuntu. Mint's another good option. And the nice thing about most modern distros is that you get at least one or two good programs for almost every like type of category pre-installed with it. So it gets to, it's not necessarily like, here's our only media player. Here's our only document creation program. Here's our only webcam software. If you install Mint or Ubuntu, I can speak from experience, you do have a little bit of variety from that. And on top of that, their store, you go and you search and you're going to find even more options. But Adore speaks the truth when it would be hard for us to do a beginner episode because of so many different needs that need to be covered. I mean, we could do a huge series of them, but, and they would be good for a short period of time and they wouldn't be good for everybody. There'd be that one person, well, I need to do this day to day. You didn't mention it.
Right. Yeah. And it's really hard to give broad beliefs on, well, this is the software you should be running. I honestly don't like saying that to everyone, but I will happily give out single, advice to single people, and because it's all very personable and it's a much more of a one-on-one. Well, what do you need? Try this. If you don't like this, tell me why you don't like this and I'll help you find something better. You know what I mean? That to me is much easier and much more accurate. I'll say, I say go with Mint, but download a lots of them and run them from live CDs or in virtual boxes and just play with initial interfaces and see what you like and what you don't like about each one of them. And in a matter of a few months, you'll probably already be beyond Mint. You won't need Mint anymore. Right. You'll probably load Ubuntu or Bodhi or Voyager or something else and be just as productive on it because you've seen other things. Mm-hmm. That's really the number one suggestion I give is whatever you do install, make sure you play with others.
Yep. That's the whole beauty about this experience is that we have so many options. Now, if you're not exercising your right to experience those options, then you're potentially limiting yourself.
Yeah.
But what's nice is think of it as right now you have an empty canvas and an empty toolbox. You know nothing. I mean, you know what you need to get done, but you haven't experienced anything yet. As you hop from distro to distro, you're going to be like, you know what? I love this one program. Like Door, he could not, I mean, he said in the past, if there's a distro he's trying and he can't install Kupfer on it, it's gone.
Gone.
He just can't, it's gone because it's one tool he must have. And well, I'll say it's fantastic.
Yeah. I'll say, quoting like a bad Hollywood movie, if I can't load Kupfer on it, it's dead to me. Because it is. Right. It's dead to me. Yes, it might be wrong of me to have that crutch of I want Kupfer, but I have the freedom to say I want Kupfer. And if this doesn't let me load Kupfer, I don't want to spend the time on it because there's so many choices.
Yep. But yeah, Mint is a good base. Ubuntu is as well. But Mint goes a little bit above and beyond with like all the audio and video codecs. But if you want to check out live environments if you want, or what I would suggest to people is because some people have no concept what it looks like. Go check out some YouTube videos. Some guys have done some great screencasts that walk you through. They're doing reviews of current releases, every single little thing that it comes with, and you'll at least get a feel for the desktop and then have a more education behind your decision to make on what to try first. But the point of the matter is try something to where you know what you like and don't like and then move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, that is and that's actually it for our voicemails. We did forget to mention that the Ohio Linux Fest is still looking for a volunteer coordinator.
Thank you.
Now, I basically told Kevin O'Brien that if I get a group of people who commit, a small group of people, I don't need a huge group of people, but commit to helping me, if I were to overtake it, we could tackle it more as a team instead of one person. And, Google. Yes, I'm still here. And I still do commit to that. So if you guys are planning on going to OLF later this year, that's crazy. I could say that now. Hit me up on Google Plus and do it sooner rather than later. Basically, I'm looking for a small, and a couple people already have. I haven't touched base with them in a while, and I need to, because the sooner that we can take this off of their plate and say, you know what, we got this handled, that just means that they get to devote more time into making that fest bigger and better. Because there were, and Doris talked with Kevin, and then we saw some things there at the fest that they learned some lessons this year, and they have plans on implementing new things. And I'm sure they do that year to year. This is their 11th year that they're going into it. So why not do our part to make sure it's going to be a better experience for everybody?
Very cool. Yeah. And I'm hoping, I plan on having Kevin on next week. He's not going to be on as a representative of OLF. We're going to talk a lot about freedom, free software, open formats, a lot of stuff, because I honestly think Kevin's a very smart guy, and I really like how he conversates, I guess is the word I'll say. But we're also going to probably talk just a little bit about the needs of OLF to remain strong, productive, and good.
Yeah. So for those of you who are sick about us talking about OLF, it's going to be a major, tiny, tiny portion of when we bring him on. So don't worry.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't wait to have him on. Apparently, I met him. I just don't remember it because I met a lot of people when I was there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But also, on top of contacting me, if you want to contact him directly, you can email him at news@ohiolinux.org.
Thank you.
So if you're considered with it, consider it in that whatsoever. And trust me, it's an awesome time, and it's going to be a worthwhile experience. You'll learn something. You'll be helping a great cause, a great group of people. So let us know.
Right. And Ohio Linux Fest has a call out on a survey.
That's correct.
That is up till, what's it, the 17th?
16th or 17th of January. So as soon as you guys hear this, basically they're closing the survey. They're keeping it open live for like 2 or 3 weeks, and it ends about halfway through January of 2013. So if you guys want to get on there and voice your opinions, if you've been to the fest in the past, or if there's a specific speaker you'd like to see, it's like a 2-question survey. It's not some big, long, you know, what do you run? What do you like? I mean, it's you could do it in a minute or less, but it's just going to give them that much more insight on what they need to do to make it better for later this year. So take the time and go do it.
Yeah, it really wasn't even a survey. Calling it a survey is much too advanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a thing with 2 questions.
That they have a question and a little something extra. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
It's literally quite easy.
Yep. So looking forward to, and I started to fill mine out. I need to go do it. I'll do that tonight and just get it out of the way.
Gotcha.
I'll do that maybe before. I'll use Beefy Miracle to fill out my OLF survey, and then I'll wipe it and install Bodhi.
Gotcha. Yeah. Sounds fair.
That sounds fair. My last hurrah.
The last thing I just want to say for the show, I got, in my opinion, some very good news here during the show. I've mentioned this, but it was a while ago. Podcast called Linux Basement. Chad Wallenberg, a very network-centric Linux administrator who is musically talented and owns an iPad. Just a nice guy. He looks like he's starting Linux Basement podcast backup. If you go on Google Plus and search for a community called Linux Basement, hopefully in the next 2 or 3 months, he'll be starting that podcast back up. I will say very honestly, that was one of my favorite Linux podcasts of all time.
I don't think I ever listened to that one.
Well, he hasn't done one in, I want to say, nearly 2 years.
Okay.
And now if you go to linuxbasement.com, it appears like the domain doesn't exist.
Hmm. I remember seeing it in like dog catcher queries, you know, for Linux podcasts, but
right. Oh, because it was good.
Yeah. I mean, and trust me, I've listened to, there's still some I listen to every week. And there are others that I listened to for a short while and then dropped off for whatever reason, just because, I mean, you know, we're all running out of time. But if Door likes it, I'm going to definitely give it a try when it comes back. And after not podcasting for even 2 weeks and then returning, I can say that it was fun. So yeah. I can't imagine him taking that much time off and now getting back into it.
Well, he was really busy, big change in life with job. And this guy's really, truly an enterprise administrator. Okay. Mm. This guy's no hokey guy. This guy really knows his stuff. And he had to move. And the place he moved, I want to say the internet speeds he was getting was something like 512 down and like 128 up.
See, that's why you investigate that before you buy any property.
Well, I don't know how much of it was really choice.
Okay.
Upon, you know, he had to do it. And the area, the general area, I got the impression nobody even remotely close had good connections.
Oh, man.
So he sacrificed for family, for career. That's mm-hmm. honorable.
Yep. That's what you got to do sometimes. And yeah, the people who do that, they're just better for it in the end. So I congratulate him on getting through that, and I cannot wait. I mean, dude, seriously, when that comes on, I will definitely download and listen to it.
Oh, yeah. To be honest, he's going to be doing a reboot here soon. I might have him on right before his reboot goes live just to help publicize him, because I want to get his numbers back up high as soon as possible, because mm-hmm. I want peer pressure to come at him from all angles so he keeps yeah. podcasting.
Yeah, there you go. And then maybe check in with every once in a while and have him in on a little segment. Like, hey, mm-hmm. is that next episode recorded? Oh, yeah, it's coming. All right. It better be.
Exactly.
Because we got people that want it. Right. No, yeah, I'll definitely have him on. I don't know him from anyone, so I would love to have him on the show. Anything that's going to make me better and meet more people in this community. I haven't met anybody. Well, I shouldn't say that. Most of the people I've met have been awesome. So,
and I'll just say I've heard stories where he sounds like a lot of fun at a Lennox Fest.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Well, maybe he and I will go hang out by the ice machine.
Maybe too much fun. Exactly. Maybe too much fun.
Okay. He'll hold the bucket. I'll sit down.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, looking forward to that, Chad. I can't wait for it. And yeah, that is good news. Any more good Linux podcasts we can continue to have on the air or get back on the air, I'm all for it. And you know what? I'm gonna insert a new segment real quick. This is Call Out of the Week. Speaking of good Linux podcasts that need to come back, hey, Buyer Brown. Turn around, find your butt, get off of it, start recording some more content and get it out there. Pod Brewers is amazing, but you know you've done more, and we want it again. Buyer Brown, I'm calling you out. I want that BBTAS back online. I want your Linux Mint reviews. I want your experience with whatever distro you have, because your voice belongs on the internet forever. And I'm not getting enough of it right now, man.
Buyer, I did not tell him to say that.
He didn't. That is me. And I haven't even listened to that much of your stuff. But what I have listened, like Sensei Sudo, oh my God, I laughed so hard when I heard that. And meeting you at OLF. Yeah, Buyer Brown needs to be back on. Yeah. Buyer Brown, make it happen.
Yeah, 2013. And I'll say, if you not checked out podnus.com in a while, we've started republishing full Podnuts episodes, Podnuts daily episodes. I just recorded a My Hard Drive Died episode 2 days ago. I hope to record a great tech debate here in less than 2 weeks. So we're trying to get all of the normal quote unquote shows back primed up, running at full speed.
And this is me speculating, but hypothetically, if the listenership of the old shows, if we get them back up and running, that might force us to bring new shows onto the network, perhaps. I mean, if we have too many people and not enough content, then it's supply and demand. We have to put out more content, wouldn't you say, Dor?
Possible.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
I concur.
I'm just saying. One last thing really quick. I put something out there for you guys to come up with kind of a way to end off the show, because I was very nervous. Well, I shouldn't say nervous, but I was trying to come up with like a cool little, you know, thing to say at the end of the shows, and now I have it, and now I'm secure, except for a couple weeks ago when I messed it up. But I was listening to Nightwise at nightwise.com, and first of all, on top of being smooth as butter, that guy has his like intro down, and it's just amazing.
Between the edge of real and cyberspace.
I know, man.
I know.
Yeah, so I'm gonna try to work on that. If you guys want to throw some ideas to me, I'll pick and choose and I'll combine something Frankenstein style, and that way I don't have to fumble through the opening of every show.
Dude, I'm gonna tell you though, you just set really high expectations for yourself.
Because
Nightwise does have it nailed and he is smooth about it.
I'm not trying to take him down. I'm just saying, I'm recognizing that this guy is doing something well, and I want something like that for me.
I'm just saying, it's like American football, and you stopped as like an 18-year-old kid and said, yeah, that guy Peyton Manning's pretty good.
Right.
I'm going to try to throw a ball like him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe, but that's shooting high, man. That's shooting really high.
I'll get some voice modulation software, some hardware. I'll sound like Ryan Seacrest, a little more, you know, bassy, right. And I'll have that smooth thing to say. Heck, you know what? I'm not even going to say it. I'm just going to have it pre-recorded, and we'll play it at the beginning of every show, and then I'll go. I'm not going to do that ever.
No. Here's the thing. His first language is not English.
I know.
So first go unlearn English, learn two other languages, and then learn English, and then speak it better than people who learned it as their first language.
And I, every time I hear him, I remember that. And one of the things that I really appreciate too is his sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you from learning a second language, trying to relay my sense of humor into Spanish and German, it doesn't work. It just doesn't. But his personality definitely shines through, and knowing that that's like his third or fourth language is just insane. Yeah. So kudos to him. Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
I need to send a voicemail onto his show about something he said. So be on the lookout or listen out. Nightwise, coming for you. Actually, it's positive. It's positive. I love his show. He had an experience he had, and I had something similar that happened. It was even funnier, so I want to have it for his show. So if you want to hear me send in a voicemail to Nightwise, keep looking at his feed. Check his feed out. It'll be coming soon.
Very cool.
All right, Dor. Anything else we got for this week? How do you want to end off? What's going on?
If you want to know more about me, to be honest, it's going to be now more at podnuts.com than it is door-to-doorgeek.com. The quote-unquote changeover, the passing of the guard, if you will, is kind of started. It's kind of becoming official. I'm not rushing Steve at all. Steve is going to do stuff at Steve's pace. Dor is just here saying, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir, something like that. It goes on. Mm. But, so I'm going to be spending more and more time here at Podnuts, being in Podnuts land. But Door Geek still works. DoorDoorGeek.com, you know, clicky clicky.
Very cool. And as always, you guys can hit me up on Google+. That's pretty much the best way to get a hold of me day in and day out, because I check that thing like a fiend all day. Definitely add me if you haven't already. I haven't been posting on there so much lately. I throw some content out there, nowhere near as much as Bill Wilson. Looking at you, Bill. But I'm going to be more active on there. But yeah, if you guys want to hit me up on there, definitely I'll answer any questions for you, much like Dor would if you do that. Please check out the ACF.co, Accessible Computing Foundation, run by our good friend, Captain Jonathan T. Nato. That's me saluting you, sir. Fantastic organization. For as little as $2 a month, you can help the Accessible Computing Foundation get technology into those that otherwise would have been left behind. I myself contribute, and I feel very good when I get that notification via PayPal that someone took money away from me. I get a little like, who was it? I look, I'm like, oh, then it was them. I'm fine.
Yeah.
So if you in these winter months need that warm feeling, do that.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very worthwhile. Once again, if you are interested in being a volunteer coordinator for Ohio Linux Fest, please contact Kevin O'Brien at news@ohiolinuxfest.org. And that is it for our almost 2.5 hour long show, which should suffice considering we haven't done a show in 2 weeks. I am Cody Cooper. And remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It's for all of us. Good night.